Hey, are you tired of meeting with prospects only to have them put you off again and again, turning them into yet another missed opportunity? Are you tired of trying to do the same things in meetings and not seeing any improvement in the amount of business you're closing? Do you want to stop giving your time away in hopes that a client will buy something or someday transfer their assets? Well, Whiteboard University is our two-hour live workshop where we will teach you how to have engaging meetings with every prospect and client you meet with, how to quantify your advice so prospects are willing and excited to pay you a financial planning fee, and finally, where we teach you how to explain financial strategies in a dynamic, interesting way that will separate you from all the boring advisors who do the same old thing. If you're serious about having better client meetings and closing business faster, visit WhiteboardU.com today and sign up for one of our live workshops in November. Whiteboard University offers a 100% money-back guarantee if we don't help you improve your communication and meeting skills. That's WhiteboardU.com. We'll see you there.
Brittany, thanks for being here. You were on the Becoming a Lead Advisor podcast. You were talking to financial advisors, entrepreneurs in the investment space. You are in our space, which I love, so we can use all the financial advisor lingo. But thanks for being here.
You know, it is my great pleasure. I have been looking forward to this conversation.
All right, good. We talk a lot in our community about your role. At what point do advisors have a COO? We talk about living in your superpower. There's a lot of kind of sole advisors out there that are business owners / advisors / HR. So I'm excited to kind of dive into that and for you to challenge all of us on it's probably not best to always do it alone. But if you can start kind of giving us a high level of how'd you get into the industry and then how did you get to the position you're in now?
Sure. I rewind back. It's been almost 16 years since I joined the industry. And I actually came from something totally different. I was in more of a corporate environment. I was actually selling jewelry at the time and absolutely loved it. There's nothing better than selling engagement rings to really nervous guys. Nice. So that was really fun. I saw this job opening. I was wrapping up college. I had been running a store. I had really climbed the ladder pretty quickly at a young age. And saw this job ad and I was like, I don't know what it is about this company. I really had no interest at the time in finance. Anybody that knew me would have been like, Brittany, really? You're going into finance? Like that was your least favorite thing in this whole business venture when you were in college and all those great things. So if I could say hindsight's 2020, it was definitely the entrepreneurial spirit of the company. That was what attracted me to it. That was what was in the job ad. So I actually started out in client service. I was supporting an advisor. I was prepping paperwork, dealing with a client. And I quickly realized that, you know, that really wasn't where maybe my skill sets lied. I could do it and it was fine, but it just didn't feel really aligned to what I was called to. So push come to shove, one thing after another. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt real quick. What was it about the company that made you feel like they were entrepreneurial? Kind of, I know a lot of companies say that. What kind of gave you that sense?
You know, it was one of those things where from the interview process to walking into the office to the experience with the team, it just felt different. And, you know, they were huge proponents of learning. And you hear that in all kinds of companies. They're going to tell you, you know, we want you to be a lifelong learner. We want you to, you know, grow and expand and all those great things. But as I started going through the process and they're talking about some of the groups they're involved with, that was when I found out what Strategic Coach was with Dan Sullivan. And some of the other entrepreneurial groups that are out there that the founder participated in and that I would come to participate in too. So it was about the culture. It was about more than staying inside the lines of some, you know, proverbial, call it, I hate to knock the corporate world because it's great for some people, but to stay within the lines, you know, that's where I kind of struggled before this industry was everything was so defined. Everything was like, you do it this way. You have these steps. This is how it ascends. And I quickly realized that that was not the box that I was meant to be in. So it was a variety of things, really, when it comes to like the entrepreneurial spirit and what it was. I don't know that I can pinpoint one thing. It was a culmination of things there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then so you started in that role. So, how long were you in that initial role?
Gosh, it was probably maybe a couple years. And then an opportunity came up where I was able to step into the operations role and step more into more of a leadership. I started working really closely with the founder. One thing led to another, and I was the COO, and now I am president and one of four partners in the firm. Really working on the vision and pushing it forward. And I will say, tying back to, you know, any advisor that's listening in, if you feel that, you know, kind of entrepreneurial buzz in your gut where you have maybe a variety of interests or, a calling of sorts to go beyond just, you know, financial advice or financial management, that was something that I learned that from a young age, that's what it was that was in me, was that entrepreneurial spirit, was that hunger for impact. And that's really been, call it, groomed over the years, and I've had the chance to really grow that.
That's great. There's a book called Business Made Simple, and in there, it was the first time I was introduced to the idea of like entrepreneurial and then intrapreneurial. And it sounds like what you're experiencing is like Brittany doesn't have to go start her own company from scratch to strike that, hey, I want to create things, but like the mindset of like you can enter an organization and bring so much value by being like an entrepreneur. Kind of as I read that, like we're trying to find those people that are not like, I want to go out and restart everything, but like I can still bring that force or that fire to a company I'm working within.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I've done both. I've started companies. Again, I am that proverbial, what do you call it? Opportunist maybe isn't the right word, but I love starting.
I'm saying no. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you know, that is a thing. I'm working on it.
Maybe some of that. Yeah.
There's a book coming about that. I've started multiple different ventures, and but there is something powerful about being able to bring your talents and grow an existing company and make it even more successful and even more profitable and, you know, attract talent and all those great things. So yeah, in and out, I think that there's so much to be said either way.
That's great. So you found yourself into that role, that those opportunities presented themselves, but I'm at that point, I'm guessing you'd already proven that you deserve the opportunity. It's not something you said, hey, just give it to me before I've showed you what I got.
There's a really funny story behind this, Den. And I didn't give any prompting to this. So when the operations position came up as available, the gal who was in the role was moving to be closer to her kids, and they actually had hired a recruiter. So this is, you know, young Brittany. I think I was maybe 24 at the time. I kind of slowly raised my hand like, hey, I can do this. Like I came from this world. I know how to lead and I know I'm young, but I can do this. So I had an interview with the recruiter. At that time, they were trying to get people to come from some of the bigger cities. Like we are in rural southern Minnesota. There's no, you know, when you look at talent pools and you look at, you know, some of the bigger cities that you can hire recruiters and you can poach and all that great stuff, that just doesn't happen where we are. Cool. So they're trying to entertain the idea of giving somebody a Mercedes or some huge incentive to come move to small town USA to be our operations and someday COO. Yep. And after talking to me, the recruiter went to Brian, our founder, and she was like, what are you doing? Like, put Brittany in the role. Like, can you not see what's right in front of you? And his immediate response was like, really? Like, Brittany? Really? And so he had so much doubt. And now we laugh about it. If he was here, he would be cracking up right now because he learned very quickly that it was absolutely the right choice. And, you know, it was one of those things where I did step into it and I worked really, really hard to show and prove that I was made for the role and more. And it's all history from here. So yeah, it wasn't super obvious. Mercedes, right? What was that?
You got a Mercedes, right?
You know what? To this day, that is still a running joke. I have not gotten a Mercedes.
Nice.
My sights set on bigger things now. Now we've moved on to like a jet or something. Perfect. So
move on. So what did the team look like, kind of makeup wise? I've learned in various ways, bigger is not always better. There's probably a point where you're like, you need some foundational team to actually run a healthy practice that can grow and sustain growth. How is the team structure, headcount, changed over time?
Yeah, I love this question. And I think you bring up such a great point that bigger is not always better when it comes to your team size. You know, I think at the time that I was brought on, we maybe had around, I want to say it was like eight or nine people, team members. Now we sit around 14. You know, it's interesting because I think that there is so much opportunity, especially in our industry. So if we were to look at, like, one of the things that I love is looking at other industries and seeing what's working, seeing what's hot, seeing what's helping people grow, and then bringing it back into ours to see how we can mold it and make it work for us. And if you look at what's going on right now with AI, with technology enhancements, you know, we have seen some of the fastest booms and fastest for biggest growth in technology capabilities, and it's just moving at an even more rapid pace. So what does that mean for us, right? From, we'll just say, a compliance perspective, they don't always like AI. They don't always like all the things that it can do. But I think what we're going to see is the entities that are adopting it and doing it in the right way are just going to see this accelerated growth. So what does that mean? I don't believe that AI or technology is necessarily going to replace jobs, but it will absolutely replace the people that aren't embracing it. Mm. So what that means is you have to be willing to adopt. You have to be willing to learn. You have to be willing to embrace it, because it's not going anywhere and it's going to make our jobs even easier. So I think that, you know, when you look at team size and growth, I think now is a great time to get creative, to look at, you know, how can we get this done without adding a ton of headcount, but just finding really quality people that embrace the capabilities that are out there to make their job even easier so that we can get client facing. Yeah. You know, that's one thing that we've looked at and that I've helped many, many firms over the years, you know, really look hard internally to say, how do we just sharpen the amazing talent we have and how do we get them to embrace the tools that make their lives easier so that even more people can get in front of clients? Yeah. Because how are we growing our business? It's by building relationships with the wonderful people that we serve. Yeah. So it's not just the advisors that need to do that. It's everybody on the team, from the person who greets people that come in the front door to your client service team, to your marketing, to your wealth service, to the advisors. You know, it doesn't matter. The more we can get in front of clients, the more opportunities that will become. And I think that can happen without having to add a ton of people, but more so embracing the technology that is in front of us.
Nice. I see that. The if we can pivot into culture, motivation, I know our team, we're using EOS now. As a leader, I've struggled in the past to hold people accountable. To me, either I felt like you were on their team and encouraging and being nice, or you were super intense, cutthroat, hit your goals or you're fired. I now know it's not one or the other, but you can do both. You can love on people and help develop them, give them every chance to be successful, but there's still, you know, some level of results that's required, or it just may not be a good fit. So with me sharing that, what does that trigger in you, and how would you speak into practices where, you know, advisors now are trying to, it's hard to find good people. You want to compensate them well. You want to hold them accountable, but you're also scared of losing them. How do you handle all that?
Yeah. I wish that there was a magic solution to this, because this is a hot topic in our industry. The accountability component, especially for whatever reason, when it comes to tracking advisor activity, this is something that comes up all the time. I think that there is the accountability. It can be looked at as a dirty word. Nobody likes the A word. They see that and they're like, great, he's holding me accountable or she's holding me accountable. What does that mean? You know, and I think that there is so much to be said about it. So I think really what it boils down to is helping people to see what they're capable of. And I think oftentimes people end up selling themselves short, not because they're lazy or because they don't want to do it or whatever, but mainly because they maybe haven't had somebody to push them and to help them see what they're capable of. So, you know, one thing that I think is really important, especially in our world, is you'll find, and I'm sure you've seen this done too, is that each advisor and each team member, really, regardless of the role, they operate differently and they are motivated by different things. So I think our job as leaders is to find out what truly motivates each individual person. You know, what gets them excited? What do they love about their job? You know, there's this from Strategic Coach. It's about uncovering your unique ability. It's helping people to really define and identify what are the things that are they not only exceptional at, but what really gives them energy in regards to the things that they work on. So once you identify those things, I think you can start really helping them build their action plans and their commitment plans so that they can stay true to themselves while also excelling in their role and growing in the company. You know, one of the things that we found too, especially as of recent, we're going through some structural changes in the firm. And, you know, we've been having conversations with people like, are you happy in your role? Do you like what you're doing? And we found that by asking the right questions, we're actually shifting people into different roles that are much more aligned with them. That if we would have just stayed head down and keep setting the targets and having the general conversations and whatever metrics, they maybe would have never spoke up. I mean, it took us initiating some of those conversations and then publicly encouraging people who did take that step forward so that it encouraged others to then take a step forward. So I think it's about customization. I think it's about maybe showing them that it's a commitment to themselves versus an accountability to the company or to the manager or to the team leader. You know, I'm also a huge advocate that, especially when you have quality people, we're not talking about, and I hate to go this route, but I've got to just push on it for a second. We're not talking about your C players. Okay. And I don't think I even have to go down into a deep description. We're not necessarily talking about the people who are going to come. They're going to show up. They're going to do the bare minimum to get by, and they're going to clock out and go home and not think about a single thing. Yeah. What we're talking about here are the people that give that extra effort, that higher level. You know, they're internally motivated. You know, they want to succeed and excel. I'm a big believer that when they start slipping off, when they start falling off that ledge and things aren't going well, that you have to give them a little grace and get to the bottom of what's going on. So I think to your point is you'll see people that go one way or the other, where it's like you go into, like, I call it mother nurture mode, where it's like, oh, come here, honey, it's okay. Let's pick up. Let's see how you're doing. Yeah. Or you go to the extreme where you're like, what's wrong with you? Like, are you stupid? What's happening here? And you have those extremes. I think that there's something in the middle for those high achievers. Because again, if they're falling off, if they're slipping off, if they're not hitting their targets, what is going on below the surface? You know, a lot of times there can be something that they're dealing with. You know, it might be something personal. It might be something that they're, you know, battling with a team member, or they had a really bad experience with a client, they can't get over it, or whatever the case is. I just think it's our job as leaders to uncover that what so that we can help them through it.
That's great. So as you said all of that, the advisor part of me was like, that's a lot of extra work. I just want to meet with clients and be a financial advisor. And for everybody listening, we are all business owners to some degree. I've realized there's some, if it is you and one assistant and you want to have a small business with ultimate flexibility and just make enough money for your own lifestyle, that's an option within our business. But if you want to be an entrepreneur and build a business that can survive and operate without you all the time, you do need a team. What would you say to the advisors that are like, man, someday it'd be awesome to have a Brittany? I know April kind of helps me COO everything. And so she can handle everything you're saying. It's on her KPI list. Like, she's driving. I get to be a part of it, but I don't have to be the force behind it. For the people that don't have your role yet, what are some practical, you know, is it meet with everybody quarterly just to give them an opportunity to speak up? Clear job descriptions. What are some really practical things that people can start doing?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I absolutely love this, because most advisors will find themselves in this trapped seat where you're growing, you're adding a few team members, and all of a sudden you go from being an advisor that just wants to serve clients, and all of a sudden you have to manage a team, and you're looking around and you're going, what the heck did I get myself into? Like, this is not what I signed up for. I don't want to deal with people. This is terrible. Yeah. So I would say that there are absolutely a few things that you can do to take the pain away as you're navigating and trying to get somebody in the seat. If you have somebody in your firm who you see potential in that could run the office, that could handle everything for you, these are things you could have them start doing too. So We firmly believe in quarterly pulse checks. I don't like to call them reviews because I think reviews are garbage anyway. This is maybe a strong opinion, but I don't love the grading scale. I don't love the numbers scale because it's all relative. A 9 to me could be a 7 to you. A 10 to you could be a 5 to me. It's all relative. So to me, the pulse check is more about where are you stuck? Where are you excelling? What are your big wins for the last quarter? How are you setting yourself up for success going into the next 90 days? And where do you need the most support? Those types of conversations prove to be so much more productive than going through some proverbial checklist where you're grading somebody on a scale and they walk away feeling ick because maybe they thought they were going to get a 9 and you gave them an 8 as a whole. It's silly. That's, again, strong opinion. I know there's others that agree with me. I'm totally open for debate on that, but that's where what I believe. So I think quarterly pulse checks are really important to help people feel like they have something to move forward to, but also to kind of do a wrap on the last 90 days. You know, some of the other things too is I think just making really intentional effort to get to know your people. This is one that can feel a little bit, I don't know what you would call it, off to some advisors, especially those that are very strong business minds who are like, you're here to do a job. Yes, we're a team. We're not necessarily a family. You know, we don't need that dynamic. So this can be a tough one. But I'll tell you, just making those little concerted efforts, walk around your office, even if it's once a week, even if you have just 2 people on your team or you have 20 people on your team, make it a point to go and ask like, hey, how is your kid's soccer practice going? Hey, you know, what's going on with you? Is your husband feeling better? Is your spouse feeling better? Like, whatever. Just make a point to really get to know humans in your space, because if they don't feel seen, if they don't feel heard, and if they don't feel appreciated for who they are, you're just not going to get that same level of commitment as, you know, you would if you had those really close ties.
For anybody listening, that's hard for me. I'm more of like get in the office, get results, lead by example. Internally, I want to do it. I definitely care, but I have to make effort to, even if it's a calendar reminder. And so if anybody's listening and they're like, "That I don't like that. It drains me. It's not natural to me." Try not to use that as an excuse not to do it, because I agree with you. People have to feel like this person cares. They're checking in. But for some people, like, I love that part of my day. For others, it may feel like I have to stop my day and go do that.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, I can be guilty of that too. You just get going and you've got a million things on your calendar and it's really easy to click snooze and you're like, I'll catch up tomorrow. But there's just so much impact there. And I would say if there was one more thing, I love threes. You'll see that the 3 months, the 90 days, the 3 things, no more than 3 priorities, all that good stuff. The third thing that I would say, if you're looking to grow yourself as a leader or grow a team member into a leadership role, you as the lead advisor, as a founder, whatever your title is, need to be crystal clear on your vision. What is your vision for the future? And I love that you mentioned EOS, Sten, because I think that is a great track. You know, I think there's some modifications to be done to make it fit our industry, because initially it was built more in the manufacturing space. But I think where they really win and what is such a home run is that vision traction organizer. So it's that 3-year look into the future where you say, you know, where do we want the company to be? You know, what's the big kind of 10-year vision? What's that big thing that feels like I have no idea how the heck I'm going to do it, but it'd be real cool if we got there. And then spelling out specifically what you want to see happen so that your team knows exactly what they're moving towards. And to go hand in hand with that vision, you know, Sten, you brought up a really great point that you get in there and you're like, lead by example, get to work, head down. That's also important. You know, if you're not leading by example, if you're all wordsmith and you're not doing the things that you've deemed to be the most important things for the company, it's really hard to get buy-in from the team. So I think that clarity and vision and being able to articulate it is so important. If you struggle to articulate, because I have seen this happen time and time again. I've coached advisors over the years in this topic. And sometimes it's just the articulation piece. It's like it's all up here in their head. They can see it clearly. But when it comes to getting buy-in from the team, it's just like beating their head against a wall. They're like, why won't they get it? And the team's going, I don't know what they're talking about. And there's this constant friction. So that's another thing. As you're looking at a team member that can maybe step into a COO, an operations, a president role, whatever that looks like, you would benefit from finding somebody that can help kind of understand your vision, but bring it to life in front of the team. Takes a little bit of that pressure and that load off of you if that's not your unique ability and not your skill set. But it's just a catalyst for massive growth, being able to have that clear articulation.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love your strong opinions. I'll share one of mine, that if you are an advisor, you should have a plan to hire people. If you are one person, unless you just want to create a really hard job for yourself, that's just long hours, you know, we can get paid pretty well, but like everything relies on you. You have to work all the time. You're dealing with all the curveballs and fires in the business. You need to say, okay, my next hire is going to be this. My next hire is going to be that. I think you do have to accept the season of taking on a few more things. Kind of like I might have to be the encourager to the team or the reminder to them on vision until you find the COO operations person. I believe anybody that's running a business that wants to be a business owner, not just an employee to themselves, has to have a team. And so we see advisors, they need to have support. Maybe that's one or two people, a pair planner of some kind, because there's things they can do that the other support people should not. A junior advisor, or another advisor, a lead advisor, and then a COO. So I believe a team of five or six in this business, and then you can add other people as you grow. I mean, you can have a $2-4 million a year revenue practice and actually have time to do things in your life with that team. Is there any of those seats on the bus that you would say you need this person or you don't really need that person?
You know, I think one thing I have seen, and maybe it's a little bit of, I call it the growth culture that's put in front of us. So people get really excited at the notion of a marketing person or even an operations person. And it might be before they need it, because what's the deal with those roles? They're sexy. They're exciting. You know, you think about growth and you're like, oh my gosh, so many marketing initiatives and all these great things. And it's like, well, do you need that? Or do you just need somebody to take the paperwork load off of your desk so that you can get in front of more clients? You know, I think there's always a time and a place. I think that those roles can be very, very valuable. But I think sometimes it jumps the gun to what's exciting and what feels like a growth opportunity, when really it could be a giant waste of money if you're not quite ready for it. So I think that's really important. The other thing I would add too, because I agree with you that, you know, with that handful of kind of a core team, there's a lot you can do in your business and you can grow a very lucrative business as well. The other thing I would add is that as you're going through these different levels of growth, I highly recommend that you keep, I mean, it can be literally like a post-it note at your desk where you keep track of the things that you don't want to do as you evolve. So right now, like, let's just say that you're listening to this and you have maybe one or two assistants in the office, really small operation, but you're looking to grow. Your list today of the things you want to stop doing, it might be, you know, checking on a case or pushing some paperwork along or having to follow up with a client on a signature or whatever that might look like. Those are things you likely want to get off your plate. As you continue to grow and evolve, you might say, you know, I want the management of the people in my office off my plate, or I actually don't even want to meet with all of these clients anymore. I only want to meet with my top 10% of my book. Okay, I'm going to put that down. I don't know how that's going to happen, but the more that you put to paper and the more that you commit to internally, the more likely it is you're going to find a solution, because all of a sudden you go into the science behind it, your reticular activating system kicks in, and now all of a sudden you're looking for solutions inadvertently and unconsciously, or subconsciously, I should say, to some of the bigger problems that you have as you grow. So I think that not to do or that stop doing list is so incredibly important, because it's really the only way that we level up as people and that we level up our business, is by getting rid of the stuff that no longer serves us and letting us kind of expand into that new opportunity, that new role, that next level of growth.
Yeah, that's practical. That's great. All right. So we are challenging people. People are now like, wow, I need to hire somebody. I need to find a Brittany. Where can somebody go next to kind of get a little bit deeper? I know you've coached people, written some books. What's the next practical step as somebody's kind of been challenged or wants to do something?
Yeah. You know, I think honestly, step one is just make a commitment to what you want to do, right? Like get clear on what your next step is so that you can actually take action towards it. So if it is, all right, I know I need to hire an operations person. I know I need an operations manager. I need a COO. All right, let's get that to paper and get into the recruiting space. You know, find a recruiter that can do this, the hunting for you. There are so many talented individuals out there that can take that load off of you. Yes, it might be an initial investment upfront, but I think having that first level of commitment is really important. Honestly, it's as simple as that. It's, you know, we make things so hard. We make things so complicated. You know, I think about all the different advisors that I've interacted with over the years, whether it's through our coaching, through some of our conferences, whatever it is. And it's amazing at how no matter really where people are at in their business, the struggles are very similar. And the chain of events is very similar. So I think if you make your first commitment on what you need and actually take action towards it, the second thing I would recommend that will never, ever steer you wrong is to put yourself in rooms with people that have created the success that you want. Yeah. I will tell you firsthand, in and out of the industry, putting yourself in spaces where you feel maybe a little bit of imposter syndrome, maybe even a little inferior in some ways because people have created some crazy levels of success, that's only going to help you level up. So really kind of lifting your head and paying attention to the things that those people are doing so that you can learn from their mistakes, so that you can replicate some of their successes and their wins, it's going to help shortcut your path to success immensely. So I think those are a couple practical things that people could do very quickly and very easily to help them, you know, level up and create that next level of success that they desire.
That's great. Yeah, I've learned and I've challenged people outsourcing the accountability. Like if you're doing it in your head right now, like even the most dedicated of us all alone is tough. And so if that's like a coaching community, a study group, there's something. And there's a great stat that your probability of success goes up 95% if you outsource your accountability. So if you've taken a run at this on your own, you're like, it never works. Well, there's a good chance you have not pulled somebody else in. So I challenge everybody listening with that. Brittany, thank you. This was fun. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.